financial value. So if you've recorded the first half of this show, let me know at 423-HUFF, and we will try to get in touch with you, we being me and all my many imaginary cohorts. You can also listen to this show, in case you didn't know, on www.microradio.net/FRSC, which is the website. And we stream on the web. At least I'm told we stream on the web. Now, I've never actually heard it, and I've never actually been on the moon either, but the rumors of both these things are real entities, and they can in one way or another be approached. Usually the website is easier to reach than the moon. But it's even easier to reach Free Radio by phone. 427-3772 is the phone number here, and I encourage you to call in and talk with us, just like that last caller did. I failed to ask him, and if he's listening and he has a report, he might want to call back if he's got any updates on rent control in Santa Cruz or San Jose, which was at one time, apparently, experiencing some ripples of activism in that direction, although I haven't heard too much lately, and I know we were talking about bringing down the Berkeley former head of the rent control board to chat with people and organize, and that kind of seemed to disappear under the waves, and of course, it's still available. I think we may be able to get that man back again to talk publicly. If people are interested in rent control and they want to do some organizing, hey, give a call to 423-HUFF and light a match under my gabuga, and maybe we'll start chatting about that issue, or at least I'll give people support who are interested in that issue, because it is an issue I'm interested in. Camp Paradise. Now, I think this tape is actually working. Let's see if we can tune in on an interview recently with one of our Camp Paradise... I don't call him a spokesperson, but he certainly is a resident there, Dirt Clod.
It's only rose in our area.
It's an
inch and a half,
6:25 on
in the past
July 22nd, Sunday afternoon, here at the Coffee Roasting Company. Dirt Clod is talking about a dike put in at the mouth of the San Lorenzo River, which is now beginning to back up water and flood out campers. With us is Sherry Connable and John Hamilton.
No, they've developed this dike across the San Lorenzo River at the ocean point, and
And actually, this turned out, we think, to be a false alarm. When I spoke to a nearby neighbor who had been talking to the head of the camp, Larry Templeton, he told me that there wasn't so much that there was a dike, though a number of people were flooded out, but it was strange and unusual high tides that had that effect. So when you listen to this concern about a new dike that has flooded out lower people, people in lower lying areas, bear that in mind, that people apparently were flooded out. They did come to Camp Paradise, and they were accommodated there, but it didn't have much to do with the dike. There was no dam or dike as far as the latest information goes. But if anybody sees any dam construction or any dam constructionists, or perhaps some strict construction, well, I'm going to avoid this punning situation before I go crazy, but let's hear some more of this tape.
I don't know how high the levee is. I'm on my way to go down there and see it. But they blocked that off, and the intentions of blocking that off is to hold the water back of the San Lorenzo River so it would swell up and spread over more acre feet so it looks like a fuller river, even though it's depreciated.
Okay.
But in the result of this, people that are camped, that are camped down on that levee area, as the water rises, they're flooded out of their camps, so they're looking for higher ground and come to Camp Paradise knowing that it's secure and safe. See? And
so
this
far.
Is what... Yeah, this is what's taking place. We've had, in the past 12 hours, we've had 8 people come into the camp, you know, seeking refuge and stuff like this, because obviously, you know, the shelters are full and there's no refuge there. They've flooded out of their camp, so they're looking for higher ground, and we're on higher ground. We're in a very safe part of the floodplain where it takes several feet of water.
Make sure that they go by the guidelines, no drinking, no drugs.
Right.
Now, you don't want to mess that up, you know.
Right. You know, we still have the same ruling going on, which is no drugs, no alcohol, no violence, which, you know, keeps the calm in the area, because we're all struggling survivalists there to, you know, meet from one day to the next day. So that's what's going on right now, is we're taking an influx of these people that, you know, automatically, you know, the shelters are full.
Well,
there's no place for them to go.
You know, there's more power in numbers. So, if they go by the rules and the numbers and they support you and everything, and they become part of the community, more power, you know, more bodies, more power, you know.
We had a total head count of 32 at one time, and Day before yesterday, that was worked down to 16. Wow. And we probably have a 14-person headcount now.
That's 30.
Yeah, uh-huh, since 30. So, and now that we've accepted about 8 more people into the camp because of the flooding the diking of the river, we're back up 14, 8 of 21 people.
Right.
So, you know, we stay in a mass. That's one of the ways that we feel that we're protected amongst ourselves. Is, you know, they can walk in on a couple of guys, you know, beat them up and brash them around and stuff like that. But when a few officers walk into a mass of people, they're like, uh-oh.
Yeah, right.
You know, and, of course, you have to understand police officers are the largest organized crime and gang unit in the world.
What kind of comment is that?
It's true, though. It's very true. Sacramento showed me, man, because their police enforcement, that, you know, they take and bring out 100 officers for 2 people altercating with each other. I mean, you know, what kind of sense is that? Yeah, bored. Trying to get the taxpayers' dollar, I don't know.
Sherry, you recently gave a letter to the mayor and the city council, which kind of recapitulated some ideas you'd presented 5-6 years ago when the River Street refugees were seeking to find a safe place to camp. Have you had any success in getting any response from council or any council members?
No, not really. Tim did write back in response to this letter about Camp Paradise and basically said what he's been saying in the media, which is it's not an enforcement priority and there's no reason to really move in there. And
but he actually put that down on paper.
Yeah, he wrote that to me and he said he just sort of thanked me for my comments. And he didn't really reference any of the other suggestions that I had made. Actually, that was at the time that the task force was formed, right after Tim and Keith and Chris were elected. And I wrote that list of suggestions of things they could start to implement. But no, there's really never been a response to that directly.
Can you summarize just briefly what your suggestions were that you think are pertinent now, if they come to mind?
Well, I think one of the suggestions that's the most reasonable is to set up a designated camping area. There's a piece of the Poganuk right at the entrance of Golf Club Drive that's really separate and distinct from the rest of the Poganuk. It borders open space. It borders what used to be Bob's campground. I've walked that site with a number of homeless people in the past. They feel like it's a perfect site to be developed into designated camping. And I really think that the folks at Camp Paradise have demonstrated the ability to take land and transform it, you know, into a livable camping area, and to do that sort of in community. And I was suggesting that they might be given the chance to move to that land and do that there. And that land could actually serve probably up to 70 or 80 people. I outlined a lot of other things, using parking lots, using designated streets for vehicles, trying to get businesses that would agree to take 5 or 6 vehicles each would be given a porta potty by the city, since there's a lot of issues around sanitation. I outlined a possible friendship program where people who are interested in helping out homeless people by letting them camp in their backyard or park in their driveway would be matched up with homeless people who are seeking help. Say if somebody was particularly interested in helping a vet or helping a mom and a kid, whatever. There's a whole list of suggestions. I just think that what's lacking is still the will to really take the issue on and transform it. And I think till the will is there that we can continue to suggest solutions. I don't think they'll be embraced. The only thing that the current council seems interested in is a family shelter, and that's been clear from the time that they formed the Homeless Issues Task Force that that was what they wanted to develop, and that's what they felt like they could get support for. And it's a worthy project, but it's a drop in the bucket in terms of the need that's out there, how many people that shelter could serve, and how many people will be left unserved in the position of still being illegal in our city.
And indeed, the two task forces that they formed, the Homeless Issues Task Force and the Camping Ban Ordinance Task Force, weren't really necessary to proceed with this family shelter. They sort of had their own stuff already arranged. In fact, a cynic might argue that they were intended to divert people's energies and interests from broader issues that might affect a much larger percentage of the homeless community. I know in the summer of 2000, when they killed the Safe Sleeping Zones,
And that same 1 a.m. session, there was a unanimous resolution passed directing the city manager to look into private pieces of property that could be used as shelters and parking lots, similar to your proposal about businesses. And when I brought that up again in November at City Council, wondering if the city manager had done the job that he was assigned to do, and I was informed he had not and would not do it until he was again asked by the council to do it. I'm not quite sure why he has to be asked twice. Maybe it's a secret ritual of some sort. Have you heard anything about this attempt to get the city to investigate business parking lots? And also, do we know how widely business and church parking lots are actually being used by vehicles at night?
I don't know. I know a lot of churches have participated in the past. There was a 3-vehicle limit in church lots. Again, we've suggested that limit should be, greatly increased if a church is willing to accommodate more people and the city could provide a porta potty. That seems like a real reasonable solution, as with there's a lot of business parking lots. I was told by Catherine Byers earlier this week that 11 businesses in Santa Cruz are hosting, I think it's 2 vehicles each. I had actually written or called in a suggestion to Christopher Crone and Emily Riley about getting that program in particular off the ground, because I think that's a really good idea to spread people out among businesses, to get people to know each other, to create a kind of more common and friendlier situation. And they actually didn't call me back, so that was a little discouraging. I don't really know if things have changed much in that direction.
Emily Riley and Ed Porter were two progressive votes that supposedly were supposed to join the 3 other Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar votes to help pass something like the Safe Sleeping Zones that died 4-3 last summer. Any indications that Riley and Porter are interested in any such thing or in any civil rights issues around homeless people?
You know, Robert, I honestly have not followed the current council. I've been to maybe 1 or 2 meetings briefly, so it's really hard for me to comment. I don't know if they're trying to make anything happen.
You
I know
you haven't been wasting your time at council meetings. What's wrong with you, Sherry?
I know that Emily was certainly a strong proponent of the idea of, concrete ways of helping and particularly bringing businesses into the loop. I don't know if she's acted on that or not.
Well, I know when I brought up the issue of porta potties at Camp Paradise at the last council meeting, and I specifically directed my remarks referencing her, stating because she was on the task force to examine bathrooms or to set up bathrooms as proposed unanimously and unanimously voted by Chris, proposed by Crone and voted by the council in February of 1999. And that part of that charge was to go do it in industrial zones and heavily camped zones. And no such porta potties have ever showed up there, or much less bathrooms. She gave me a very broad smile, as she always does, and then, of course, there was no comment, no direction to the city manager or the staff to look into this issue and see what has been done and so forth, and to see whether the city is blocking a porta potty at Camp Paradise and stopping private companies from proceeding. Any comment on this, Dirt Cloud?
Well, they can't block something they can't do. We already have the porta potty in our home. It runs great.
Is this for public consumption?
Yes, this is for public consumption. Anybody can come down and use my toilet. I'd be grateful to sit there and store their stuff.
So you're going to take the community shit on your own shoulders, so to speak.
I do every day for my wife, for one thing, and a lot of people don't realize that there's people down there that are disabled that cannot get out into the bushes and use that thing, and they can't get to a porta potty. So for my wife's sake, she does it in a bucket. I containerize it. I take it to a dumping site, and I dump it properly. So if there's an issue about human sanitation down there, come out and find out for yourself. If your bladder was full, what would you do? Would you do it in your neighbor's next door yard or what? I mean, we're doing the best we can, and we feel that what we've done so far is the best pertaining to the circumstances. The porta potty would be grateful, but we already have the money. We already have porta potties paid for. It's just that the city doesn't want us to put the porta potties somewhere. Well, if the city would just give us a response, of questions that we've already asked, and give us an answer to something, that'd be grateful. But on the porta potty issue, we built one. It works good, but we're buying one that's of a commercial standard. So when it comes down to these violations, so-called possible violations of environmental hazard and stuff like that, I doubt that. And we're going to find out the truth in that story is when our environmentalists that we've hired takes his impact and survey down there, then we'll find out the real truth whether we are an environmental hazard or not. Because that man, with his background, will be able to detect if the humans there have been any kind of problem to nature that's there.
There was talk at some point of an injunction being at least looked into by an attorney, not by Paul Sanford, who I think wasn't interested. He's your sort of volunteer, negotiates with the city kind of attorney guy, but an injunction that would move to stop the city from legal action against you based on the legal theory that you have no legal place to go because the shelters are all full and there is no legal space, and that any tickets issued would necessarily be a violation of the ICORN ruling, which says that you can't convict, you must provide everybody given a camping ticket with the necessity defense. And since it would be a necessity for you guys to be able to sleep somewhere legally, and there are no options for you, tickets that would have been issued would not only be thrown out, but it would be, in a way, a form of harassment to even issue them, given that they would have to be thrown out as a matter of course. Have you had any success? Are you still looking for an attorney? What's your situation?
The injunction issue is we couldn't even start to begin to use an injunction at this point, because at this point we haven't even been able to derive any answers from city council and other important entities in the community of the questions that we ask. So when it comes to an injunction, you have to pursue things at this level, at the bottom, and work your way up all the way through. We're already prepared at the other end of it to work it through the federal courts. But as law goes, as everybody knows law, you have to exhaust it in the lower courts at all possible means. And if no satisfaction is derived at that point, then you take it to a higher level. And that's what we have to do. We have to take this step by step.
What is this? I've heard this tale of a federal law that I still don't quite understand, that you've been citing about the right to camp on federal property. What, do you have any notion of what this actually is, or you're not clear on the exact nature of this?
Well, you know, nobody still, yet again, here it is, Camp Paradise is asking the question.
And stay tuned, you're listening to interview with
very much, thank you.
Dirt Club about Camp Paradise
on
July 22nd.
Well, of course, the law library should have the answers to the question of whether a federal law exists. And as far as an injunction goes, you don't need the city council to answer anything to get an attorney to say, we are going into court to get a civil injunction to make sure that they don't come after you, or if they do, they'll be subject to penalties. But of course, that requires an attorney willing to put in a lot of work, or some people who are willing to do a lot of legal work, and that has not been something you, or I, for that matter, have been able to find either for Camp Paradise or for other homeless people.
I've been checking into the issues, man. I'm an old war bird, man, for Jailhouse Civil Rights Organization Inside Out. I was a very vivid partner of it. And so I've been back in the law library studying and searching for these things and stuff like this all the time, waiting for the city council to come up with some kind of response or answer to any of the questions that we've already provided. Knowingly, man, as it says, you know, in the court system and journals of law, that you must exhaust all possible means at the bottom level, and if not, you know, satisfaction, you take it to a higher level. It's right now, it's really tricky because we feel that city council wants to be compatible and working with us, and then again, all of a sudden, we feel that maybe, you know, we're public enemy number one, and so it goes round and round and round. And the thing that I've said over radio talk show after talk show, or TV station after TV station, is there should be a solution, man, that makes both sides be happy. And that's what we're looking for.
Well, I know that you mentioned that when Officer Eric Seeley came out to your camp most recently, about, what, 5 or 6 days ago, he was accompanied by a higher officer, perhaps a lieutenant, who you didn't get his name, and then you guys were again warned
to move on or suffer camping tickets. And the Larry told them, the founder of the camp, Larry Templeton, well, where can we go? We have no place to go. And the lieutenant shrugged his shoulders and said he didn't know, but you'd have to go anyway.
Well, yeah, that's very true. In fact, you know, he didn't know. And the lieutenant and Officer Seeley, it's impossible for them two gentlemen to sit there and even start to provide answers because they're not in that business to begin with. They're law enforcement. They enforce the law. Whether they like the law or not, they're compelled to do that because that's the trade profession they chose to have.
But did they say they had received any complaints? What were they doing out there in the first place?
I think the reason why they was out there is that they hadn't been there for 3 weeks prior to that time, and they just wanted to stop by and visit and see that we haven't become, you know, a metropolis down there with everything that a city would have. They was just curious, and so they decided to come down for their own personal eyes and let the eyes look and see. And they was very good in their job profession, you know, coming down and giving us the warning and stuff like that. And since we realized that there's some rumor of talk that we're not a priority, it was probably the reason why that day they did not sit there and whip out the citation books and give us one of those things.
I understand from an interview with Skidmark Bob had with Larry Templeton on Thursday that not only were they curious to chat with you and observe the camp, but they also violated the privacy of numerous people by actually opening the flaps of tents and placing flyers inside that were in essence warnings. Is that true?
Yeah, they violated rights knowingly, maybe, unintentionally maybe, but they did, true in fact, they didn't have a search warrant to come down into anybody's home down there in a tent we declare as a home. They didn't have a search warrant to even knock on the door, open the door, and or place any kind of contents inside the tent. Normally, that little flyer they placed in there, how do we know it's not dipped in LSD, or how do we know that they didn't throw a bag in that tent and it was going to come back at a later time? So actually, man, you know, most of their action down there was unwarranted.
In both senses of the word. But I guess, you know, it is true that since your camp is technically illegal, every person who sleeps outside or in a vehicle, and that's 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz, every night is subject to search by officers, arrest, citation, harassment, because of the city's camping and sleeping ban. So they could always say to you, we don't need a warrant. All we need to do is say, point out to you, your tent is there, that's illegal, we can move on whatever we want. And to me, this is an example of a glaring omission in the law, a glaring fault in the city council, and it's just a blank check to harass homeless people.
Ooh, you hit a hard one right there. If I was an officer and I was supposed to sit there, man, and do the issue that's at hand right now, I myself would not be trespassing on anybody's property, for one, a tent, an automobile. You're there for, when an officer comes on the scene, it's for a misdemeanor or a felony. And we're trying to get sleeping and camping to become not misdemeanors. They're never even going to be felonies. It's not that kind of a criminal crime. For these gentlemen to sit there, man, and trespass on these people's property, it's a violation of their civil rights to me, a violation of their human rights. They have the right to sleep. No officer should sit there, man, and even bother anybody in sleep. In the military, 2 minutes after you've been woke up, you're not responsible for your actions. Now, you know, if the officer was coming in my tent and I was asleep and I woke up to an officer and I knew that he was there for no reason, I'd probably defend myself, disrespecting this badge because it's not supposed to be there anyway.
How are relations with the with Attorney Paul Sanford? I know that there was some problems in the past. He left town on vacation about the time when warnings were escalating against the camp around the 4th of July weekend. He had allegedly claimed to have, or Larry thought or said, he had an agreement with the city that there would be no harassment for a couple of weeks while the campers were looking for a piece of property. At one point, Larry announced there was a piece of paper that was in the safe, and then Larry claimed that he'd been told to say that by the attorney. There was some hard feeling there for a while, and I know there were even threats against the attorney, not by Camp Paradise people, but by other people, to hose down his house. And I guess Camp Paradise supporters actually set up a vigil near his house to make sure that no such hosing took place. But what's the situation with the attorney? Is he doing anything positive that you're aware of? Have any new pieces of property been offered? What's cooking with that?
The attorney, in the beginning, you know, when the attorney came into the spotlight and felt compelled, you know, to offer his services to help us out and everything like that, everything at that point, the energy level was turned up on high. And so when the energy level is turned up on high, you pay attention to certain things and you haphazardly ignore other things. And he had quotated, you know, his abilities of services and stuff like that, and stated that if we was going to end up battling this battle with violence, that he would back out immediately. And it was misinterpreted that if we was going to be so explosive in the media as we had been in the beginning, that we would that he would terminate his services. So it was a misunderstanding, and we rescinded all our feelings and everything that, and we retained the attorney because he has done us some groundwork, and some of the groundwork is that the cops have been called off. We don't know who's responsible for calling the cops off, but it seems like the attorney is doing the job that we feel just that he should do, you know, representing us and being the negotiator, since every time we ask a question, we don't get an answer. And neither does our attorney get an answer either, but he's trying more on his part because he's got the political connections in the arena, man, of Santa Cruz. And so we're appreciative in his services and stuff like this. When it comes to documentation, there is not one piece of documentation that can be drawn off a police desk, a city desk, or a Camp Paradise desk that says such and such situation has been done.
Although we apparently have heard from Sherry Connemal here just about 20 minutes ago that she received a letter from Mayor Fitzmaurice, which I have not seen, although I've checked over the city council file. I didn't check the mayor's outgoing letter file, which is a special file. But letters incoming to the city council show overwhelming support for Camp Paradise, emails and letters, 10 to 1 at least. And there are a couple of critical letters, but almost invariably they are favorable. I know that the attorney did say to me at the last city council meeting that we were both at, I think 2 weeks ago, that he had not offered to defend people's cases, or not to defend them for that matter, when the tickets came in, if they did. And there was some controversy as to whether he was annoyed that you guys contacted the media, which I think is a key point for me, because I think it was the media that may have stopped Labor Ready's dissent on your campground a day or two after the 4th of July. I don't know what you think about that, but what do you think about that?
Most importantly, in the beginning, the media has been a very important tool for us to use, and we're very appreciative for the media coming down and spending the time that they do in order to get the stories they want to give. And the story is a true story. There's no lies. There's no variations in it at all. But it has to be understood that the media is a very powerful tool for us, because this problem is just not one city problem. This problem is worldwide. And so maybe the whole world needs to know that. So to keep it swept underneath the rug is not going to get the answers to take care of the problem. So using the media as a proper tool to explain it to society that there is a problem ongoing that everybody ignores, let alone the people that are homeless to ignore. So thank you very much, media.
You are quite welcome, actually. Speaking for Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrop Spears broadsides, on which you're hearing this show, we're talking to Dirk Claude, who's a long-term resident, one might even say co-founder of Camp Paradise, way back last fall?
I became co-founder after January, but my best partner is Larry Templeton since October. And since then, we've grown so close together because we share the same thing, the houseless, the homeless problem. But one thing we also share, we share the willing, compelling desire, man, to not only help ourselves, but help our brothers at the same time that we're helping ourselves.
Any word from Ghost, who I understand moved to the state parks to kind of scout out alternate hunting grounds, so to speak, in the event that you guys do get evicted or told to move in no uncertain terms and decide to move?
My brother Ghost, he's out there, and he's out there in Harvey West Park, and his mission to do, man, is seek out camping areas and or other camping sites, legal, illegal, for us to go to if we're driven out of this one, so we have an alternative plan to fall back on to if and when nothing else has happened between now and that time that we're taken off the property, such as, you know, acquiring another piece of property to relocate to. So now Ghost is out there, and he's doing his work, and I love my brother. I really do.
What about folks from other camps? So we've been, some of us activists have been fighting the sleeping ban and the broader camping ban, have been wondering if other camps are also looking to use the model of Camp Paradise and starting to do that sort of thing, maybe even open up their campsites, announce that they are where they are, they have to do what they're doing, or perhaps even covertly come to you and say, look, we'd like to be in solidarity with you, but we have to keep a low profile. Is any of that happening?
Yeah, the other camps know that they're struggling just as much as we are before this thing became, you know, so in the spotlight with the media, thanks to them, that other camps are starting to adopt some of the principles that we have been running our camp with for a fairly long period of time. And knowing that, all the homeless are starting to become united together and realize, you know, that it's going to take not only the homeless, but it's going to take the citizens of the city to end and cure this problem and be in agreement with each other. So other camps are doing what we're doing. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, the spotlight's on us, and other camps don't want to be exposed because you never know, you know, who's hiding and who's not wanting to hide and stuff like that. So, there's talk, and I've talked to other camps, and they're struggling. They're having a little bit of problem because the cops have hit them. Unfortunately, that's being the lesser priority. But, you know, even right there, man, we feel like the cops are already discriminating on other camps and not us, and that's not right either. See.
What have you heard in terms of stats? How many camps have been hit in the last 2 weeks that you've heard about?
Four camps have been hit in the last 2 weeks that I know of myself, and that's not counting the raids that the police have been doing on the river across from me to try and clean out the heroin and other stuff that's going on over there.
By four camps, how large are these four camps, you know?
Poverty Hill, man, holds about 35 people that I have been led to understand. And Graham Hill is like 12 people. And then you see us, you know, at 16 is our lowest count and 30 is our highest count. So right off the bat, there's 100 people right there, you know, in a 5-square-mile area.
Any word about deputies operating in the county and harassment of people outside the city limits?
I've ran across a couple of reports of people that figure since they got out of the city limits, you know, they'd be all right with, you know, sleeping in secluded areas. And yes, it's true, in fact, that the county sheriffs have approached those people, Parks and Recreation have approached those people by saying, you know, they're trespassing on that land, they need to get off, or they're not authorized to be there.
Any indications of people wanting to form a vehicular residence association, that is a group of people who live in their vehicles and who want to get sort of mutual aid and protection? I've talked about that at different times in the past, and folks have stepped forward, but that never seems, or hasn't yet coalesced.
I got friends that live in vehicles, and they've been living in vehicles for 15 and almost 20 years in this community alone. And they have a daily life and a daily routine and stuff like that, but they live in a vehicle. And they would like to sit there, man, and get strong with it too. But what they're doing is they're sitting back and waiting for Camp Paradise to do all the groundwork. And then when everything's hard over with, then they want to kick in and do their thing.
Not the best strategy in my view. Now's the time for everybody to get together. If you hear of anybody who wants to form a vehicular residence association, let me know, because in Santa Barbara, a group called HOW, Homeless on Wheels, is operating, as you probably know, and you can take this with you if you want.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if I could have this on Homeless Civil Rights Updates, man, and I was reading the Santa Barbara situation there, and me being an ex-Santa Barbarian, I find it, man, so beautiful that if their city council can work with their people the way they're doing right now, how come ours don't work with us?
Well, I don't want to say a lot that's positive about the Santa Barbara City Council. I think it's the Human Rights Commission that voted 14-0 to set up a vehicular parking area, and that needs to go through the board of supervisors, as well as the shitty city council. And that's always problematic. But I understand also, and that's not included in this report, that one of the reasons that they got such a unanimous vote was that on Fess Parker's property in Santa Barbara, he allowed a campsite to remain for quite a period of time that was self-managed, perhaps in a fashion like Camp Paradise, and in such a manner that it was actually considered to be a very positive experiment like Camp Paradise until police finally just descended on it, apparently not with any particularly good reason, but just because they can, as Sergeant Clark used to say when he stole blankets from the homeless back in 1996.
Well, you know, that's a pretty cheap shot when you pick on the homeless, man. They're having a struggle in a time already as it is, you know. And if police don't have nothing to do out there but pick on the homeless, I mean, they should find another job, man, because the job security is in jeopardy. I mean, they're supposed to be out there, man, fighting crime. And I cannot understand why anybody would think sleeping outdoors or in a tent or in a car should be considered a crime.
Well, what easier criminals to deal with than those sleepy-headed campers who can easily be given tickets and driven on their way, and you get paid for doing it, too, if you're an officer.
Yeah, that's a bummer, man. Of course, we pay the price when we choose people like that to hire.
Well, it's, of course, the shitty council that, to some extent, gives a directive. But actually, the key villain here is not the city council. It's the chief of police, Chief Steve Belcher, and the city manager for life, Dick Wilson, whose name is quite appropriate. Well, he's city manager for life because the city council that appointed him and purchased him, well, they appointed him in 1984, has never seen fit to consider anybody else for his job, and we are here nearly 20 years later.
I need a job. I think I could have that one.
Dirtclod for city manager. We've been talking with Dirtclod, also known as?
Don Alden.
Of the Mayflower fame, and we won't get into that at this time, but he's a man from Camp Paradise, and if you want to reach Camp Paradise, is there a number that you want to give out?
278-9904.
278-9904. Also, the Huff line will also take messages for Camp Paradise if you want that to happen, Dirtclod. You still want the Huff line to be used for messages or not?
Yeah, still use the Huff line for messages.
That's 423-4833. If you can't get through to the Camp Paradise number, which again is
278-9904.
And there's also campparadise@hotmail.com. Is that an email address that's usable?
That's still functional.
And what do you guys need out there now?
A whole lot of love. We've got everything else. We're doing okay.
I could use a little of that myself. Contact Huff at 423-4833. Yeah, that was John Alden, a.k.a. Dirtclod, and yours truly, talking at the Coffee Roasting Company about 4 days ago with the Camp Paradise update. And since then, there have been a couple of, we actually have a new resident of Camp Paradise in the studio with us. So will you? She's not going to give her her real name at the moment, but she's going to give the real story. What should we call you?
What should we call me? Flower.
We'll call you Flower, though this is not the same Flower as often appears. Flower, you are a resident of Camp Paradise for the last 2 days?
Just the last couple of days, yeah.
And you seem to have taken a very positive view of the camp when we spoke earlier. What, you want to tell us a little bit about what you expected and what you got at Camp Paradise?
I didn't know what to expect, but when I went down there, I was really, really impressed. It was clean. It was organized. Everybody was sober and kind, welcoming. There were organic gardens growing everywhere with, you know, basil and corn and watermelon and all squash. Herbs, flowers. There were fences that had been made from fallen logs, sort of walk, you know, along the walkways, and quite a few, you know, separate campsites with tents that are, I don't know, I could go on and on. I was really, really impressed by what a wonderful job they had done making this place look so nice and feel so welcoming.
How do they make you feel?
At home, like part of something. I had been sleeping in a very small car, and I'd been suffering a great deal of pain because of it, and a lot of fear. Being there, I feel safe. One example, was just last night. I had taken my tent fly off because it was on backwards, which was, for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. But in the middle of the night, one of the other campers came and quietly said through the tent, it's getting misty, and he put the fly up for me.
And friendlier than Yosemite, it sounds like.
It's 10 times. I mean, it's sort of a family feel. You can walk up to pretty much anyone and talk to them and feel safe, you know, to say what's on your mind. They have a kitchen area set up, and then there's a working area. It's wonderful. It's beautiful there. It's right on the river. The first time I went there, I saw a blue heron and a what is the white bird?
Pelican, albatross.
No, smaller.
Flying rat, pigeon.
G starts with a G.
G. But in any case, you've seen numerous fowls.
Anyway, beautiful animals, right. Beautiful scenery, and beautiful people. It's really nice to be in a place where clean and sober is a priority.
Well, let's contrast this with your earlier experience up at Henry Cowell Campground. Now, there's an interesting contrast, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, you want to hear a story. This actually, I didn't mention to you before, was revenge for something that happened last year at Henry Cowell's. I booked a 7-night stay via the computer. That was the legal limit at the time. And around the 4th day, I was told that I was going to have to leave because I had overbooked. And I said, well, the computer booked me, so based on the computer, this is correct. And they said, no, you've got 8 days. And I said, yes, I have 7 nights. That equals 8 days. About 3 days later, the head ranger, I believe, came and woke me up at 9 o'clock in the morning. And she was very angry, and she said, I've just come to tell you that this will never be allowed to happen again. And I said, what are you talking about? And again, this 7-8 day thing. And since the computer had done the work, it was... Anyway,
you were obviously a mastermind at deceiving the computer, and you were taking away time from good American tourists who needed to use that space. So this was a year ago, this sort of 8-day controversy happened?
Yeah, and I'm certain it's because she could see from what was in the back of my vehicle that I was homeless.
What was in the back of your vehicle? What would the average person see there?
Suitcases, camping equipment, firewood, the stuff, food. In a cooler chest, you know, just the basics, mm-hmm. But maybe a little bit more than someone who
And you had been using the state parks as residences, as many people do?
Well, those, and I would take care of people's cats when they went on vacations, and, you know, whatever I could find until I was able to find housing. Actually, I'm not sure I did, but that's a separate issue. But... But what happened with that was that the entire staff split, and they argued for several days over this issue about whether I was there for 7 or 8 days. And
but why would they show up after 4 days and tell you to leave if it was 7 or 8 days?
I have no idea.
Maybe they're having arithmetic problems in the Henry Cowell staff situation there.
You got that right.
You know, maybe some remedial work. Now, if we have any volunteer tutors out there,
427-3772
is the call-in number here in case you want to join this discussion or perhaps offer your arithmetic skills to the Henry Cowell Rangers. Anyway, so we came back this year.
Anyway, I came back this year. Yeah, last mm-hmm. year, mm-hmm. When I told her that on top of everything else, she woke me up at 9 o'clock and that I'm disabled and I need extra sleep, she said, well, I could tell by looking in your tent you were awake. Well, of course I was awake. Somebody was invading my campsite. So anyway, this year I went for 1 night, and I...
Thus avoiding the 8-day controversy.
Right. I had been avoiding Henry Cowell's this year because of that experience, but that night I had nowhere to go, and I was in too much pain to sleep in this tiny little car that I'm borrowing.
You've stated you have a disability, and does it have something to do with back pain of some sort, or how would you describe your disability if you wish to talk about it?
Well, I have multiple disabilities. one set is from a car accident, so it's a lot of physical pain, back problems, neck problems, problems with my legs, and I also have immune problems, so I'm weak and I need a lot of extra rest. And you don't get that in the state parks. But you
really
do get
in
that
Henry
at
Cowell State Park.
Not there anyway. Yeah, I won't say I shouldn't be general because I have had good experiences at other parks, but not as good as Camp Paradise. But this time, I was upset about something that had happened that day. I had called in my doctor for a routine refill on a medication that without which I can't function for several days. And being on Section 8, I couldn't afford to lose a moment because I'm only functional about 3 hours a day, and I needed to find housing before it got too hot because the wind. I said three words, and the ranger took the phone away from me. And
now, where did you make this call from?
Well, I made from the payphone.
And was the ranger standing by you when you made this call?
No, he came out of nowhere. I'm wondering if the phones are tapped or what. It was behind the kiosk where you pay. I had already paid for my campsite, and I had parked, and I made this 911 call, and the call was under the assumption that they had some training and could help me with my problem, which I don't want to get into. Yeah, essentially. After the third word, the ranger took the phone out of my hand, had a long conversation with the 911 operator, which I was not allowed to hear, and I never did get to find out what was said. The next thing I know, there are two sheriff's paddy wagons and four sheriffs surrounding me. Now, I was not crying, screaming, swearing.
What about your Uzi? Did you have your Uzi out?
No, I forgot it that day. I left it at the last cat sit.
Cowell, don't leave home without it.
Anyway, I was pretty much a normal person standing there talking on the phone, and the sun was setting, so it was getting cold, and I was wearing my shorts.
Perhaps you hadn't paid your phone bill.
Yeah, right. Anyway, the sheriffs arrive about sunset, and it's starting to get cold, and I'm wearing shorts. And so I ask permission to change into my long pants. Permission denied. I was not allowed to change my clothes.
Were you being held under arrest, or were they for detention, or what were they telling you? Did they say anything? You got to stand right there, or what was the deal?
I don't know what they were saying. I was in utter shock. I could not believe that I was being surrounded by four sheriffs and a ranger, and I wasn't even crying. I was just standing there, completely dumbfounded. I had no idea what was going on.
These were male sheriffs?
Yeah, all four of them, and the ranger.
Maybe they were just trying to protect you from, you know, grizzly bears.
That must have been it.
After all, it's a wilderness area up there.
That must have been it. They should have been protecting me from the rats, but that comes later. Anyway, they did protect me. However, they searched me. They put
male officers search you. You are
putting their hands in my pocket. I really enjoyed that. And you know what they found? They found a paperclip and a Kleenex, and they confiscated them.
Did you give
both.
Them permission to search?
No.
Did you say, don't search me?
No, I was dumbfounded throughout this entire thing.
They just
took
the liberty, huh?
Yeah, I had no idea what was going on. Right. I really didn't. All I do remember is that I kept repeating, I'm cold. Can I please put my pants on?
And they kept saying,
no. Then I needed to go to the bathroom, and I got to do that in front of the sheriff.
You have to talk to the city council before you get to go to the bathroom. You know that, don't you?
I guess so, but if you let the sheriffs watch, you can bypass the city council.
Oh, so you were able to... The sheriffs gave you a special dispensation to go to the bathroom?
To watch me pee, yeah.
Oh, they insisted on watching you pee?
Oh, yeah. They wouldn't let me shut the door.
I see.
I think I was going to drown myself in the toilet or something.
Possibly,
I don't know.
Right.
anyway, my medical condition does cause confusion, so I, both now and then, and I'm really confused now because I don't know what's going on in terms of this thing at Henry Cowell's.
As you reflect upon it.
Yeah, all I remember was I kept asking to put my pants on because I was cold.
Now, were you able to put your pants on when you went and used the toilet? They wouldn't let you do it then.
No, I was not permitted to do that. I wasn't even allowed to lock the car. I wasn't saying much of anything. I was utterly stunned. I didn't know what was happening. I really didn't. Until they told me that they were taking me to Dominican. And then I burst into tears because I had been to the emergency room there twice before and had such horrible experiences that I have asked all my friends that if it's a matter of life or death,
anywhere but Dominican.
Anywhere but Dominican.
Now, had you been 5150 before, or was this your first 5150? 5150, for the audience's benefit, is a psychiatric hold for 72-hour observation period.
Yeah, no, I had not. I had gone into the emergency room for pain. And
you have to be declared a danger to yourself, a danger to others, or gravely disabled in order to have your rights removed for those 72 hours in this way. Go ahead.
And that's what was blowing my mind, was that I wasn't even in tears. I was just dumbfounded. I was just standing there and, you know, asking for the things I needed most, which was to go to the bathroom and put on some warmer clothes.
Any witnesses of any kind? Any other people around?
Oh, this sweet little gal at the window who was enjoying every minute. She got to help with the search. She got to put her hands in my pocket, too.
But they didn't leave it to her. The men put the hands in your pockets as well.
Yeah. They all searched my pockets.
You know the name of the officer who searched your pockets?
You know, I don't know any of their names.
You probably don't want to know any of the names. And perhaps you should.
It's probably better that I don't.
For reference. But go ahead.
But at some point, I think I'd like to have a record of this. Let's see. I asked if I could lock the car. That seemed to make them mad. And then I realized that I was getting hungry and that normally I need to prepare myself because I'm hypoglycemic. I don't go anywhere without food. And so I was trying to lock the car. I realized I needed food. I said, "Can I get an apple?" And the sheriff said, "I've had it with you," grabbed me, spun me around, put my hands behind my back and handcuffed me and threw me in the paddy wagon. And he said, "You're not eating in my car."
You were trying to probably corrupt him. You know, that's what Eve did with the apple. I mean, I think this is sort of a biblical thing here.
Perhaps it seemed to, at the time, that went through my head. It actually did. But I thought, my God, you know, if I can't eat it in the car, can't I eat it when I get wherever the hell we're going? But I couldn't. No, I was not allowed to have my apple. By now, I realized that something serious was going on, and I shut my mouth. I didn't say a word for the whole trip. I just laid down. I can't tell you how defeated I felt laying in the back of that car.
Did they
handcuffed.
Say anything that you remember?
He didn't say a word. I didn't say a word. I just lay there and stunned, shocked, dazed, confused, had no idea what was going on. I really didn't. Nobody said you're under arrest, so why was I in handcuffs? Why was I searched? My car was not thoroughly searched, but it was gone through.
And this was without your consent as well?
Yes.
But it was also in the absence of your objection. You didn't say, "Don't search my car," because you were feeling somewhat overwhelmed by the situation?
I didn't understand the situation at all, besides feeling overwhelmed. And the other thing that I kept repeating, besides I'm cold, is I'm really tired. I just want to lay down on my cot. I just want to go to my campsite and lay down and go to sleep.
In Henry Cowell.
Yeah. I had already paid for the site. I was tired. I was cold. And those were the two things that I kept repeating.
And when was this, anyway?
The 28th of last month.
28th of June.
June 28th.
Wow. Oh, go ahead.
And it started around sunset, maybe 7-ish or something like that. We got to Dominican, and the guy at the door said, "Do you know where you are?" And I said, "Is this the emergency room?" And he said, "No, this is the mental health ward," which kind of took me by surprise because I didn't really think that people who were not acting crazy got taken to the mental health ward. So anyway,
giving you a special tour of the facilities in anticipation of breaking you down.
Oh, and they did a good job too. Again, the issue of I'm cold came up repeatedly, but no, I was not allowed to have my pants.
We're talking to Flower here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. She's describing her experiences just last month at Henry Cowell when she, we're not quite sure if her crime was using the phone on a 911 call, trying to get an apple from the car, or asking to put on her pants. But certainly one of these things was a serious mistake, and she was taken to the Dominican psych ward.
Where I had to admit to another crime, which was misuse of the 911 system.
Had you misused the 911 system?
Not in my opinion, no. But I wasn't about to tell her what I was going to tell the 911 person. I was going to say as little as possible at this point. Mm-hmm. I wanted out of there. Things were getting worse physically because I'm on medication around the clock and also on hormones. And they had taken my medications and hormones away from me, as well as my pants.
You were shivering in your shorts, getting hypoglycemic. You didn't have your medication or your hormones.
Well, I have to say they did give me some food.
Did they give you your apple?
I never did get my apple.
Never got your apple.
I never got my apple. Let's see, where were we?
You informed that you had committed another crime, which was misusing the 911 system.
Yeah, that actually came later, and it wasn't that I was informed of it. It was more or less that if I didn't admit it, they weren't going to let me go. So basically, the bottom line was everything that was said in that hospital was what I was told to say. The other part of it that really pissed me off was that the only way out is to pretend that you're having a good time and that you're happy to be there.
Hey, it's good training for being a wife. Now, we've got some, we won't get into that at this time.
Anyway.
Feminists, you may call in next. Okay.
And I'm cold. I go up to the desk and I say, excuse me, about 6 times.
Right.
And I get ignored. So I pick a second employee. I do the same thing. Excuse me. 6.
Now, had anyone informed you as to why you were being held there?
No.
And this, so you...
But they did tell me that I was going to be held there for 72 hours, and I told them that I couldn't afford 72 hours. I had things to do.
Had you paid for more than 72 hours in your campsite, wouldn't you be evicted and your van confiscated and such?
Or? Oh, it was just a small car.
You paid for one night, right?
Well, actually, it's a borrowed car, so the sheriffs were going to call the owner and have her come pick it up.
Uh-huh.
And,
Did she get in touch with you, or did she learn where you were? Or?
She did, but it was via me. Apparently, they didn't call her right away. I guess they were waiting for a final decision or something, but I didn't know that. I was told that I was going to be held for 72-hour observation.
Mm-hmm.
I was cold, and I wanted my pants, and I was now starting to have serious cramps because I couldn't have my hormones.
Mm-hmm. Did they give you a room with a blanket or anything like that? Or
they finally did give me a blanket, but it didn't keep my legs warm.
Now, were you in a holding area, or where were you?
I was in what they called the observation area.
And what did that amount to, the observation area?
A great big, cold, gray room with a desk and some people behind it who wouldn't respond when you said, excuse me, and some tables, and then... I guess there were some rooms, observation rooms, where they took the doorknobs off.
Is there a bathroom in there?
Yeah, with no doorknob.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it gets a little gross, but because I wasn't able to take my hormones and such, I had to use the bathroom eventually. First of all, it was around 11:30 at night now. And they told me that I wasn't even going to talk to anyone until after the shift change at midnight. Now, I normally go to bed around 7 or 8, and it's after midnight. I am exhausted. I'm cold. I'm scared. And it turned out to be closer to 12:30, 1 o'clock before I got to talk to anybody. And anyway, during that time, I started having severe cramps. I started bleeding, and I also have some other fecal incontinence, so I'll just put it right out there.
You shat yourself? Is that what you're saying here?
Exactly. And I
was... Let's not bandy
so
words here, folks.
Yeah, let's not. Because
the radio says it like it is. Everybody does it, but very few people talk about it on the air. We do.
It would not have happened if I could have taken the hormones that I had requested, but I was told that I could not have them until morning, and furthermore, I was chastised for not listing them as one of my medications, because I always thought of them as hormones. And I sort of have separation between hormones and medications, kind of like church and state. So let's see. I've been told now that I'm being held for 72-hour observation. I'm asking for my pants again.
Did you clean yourself up after this incident?
I was so defeated that I didn't care anymore. I mean, that they had me broken down to the point where I didn't care. And that's what really, that's what frosted the cake. I mean, that was, I don't know, unforgivable. I don't know, there are no words for demoralizing somebody to that degree where they don't even care about something like that. But that's how demoralized I was. And I was in a lot of pain from the cramps, which had more of my attention than anything else.
Now, were you there with anyone else other than the staff person at the desk, or were you alone there?
There were three people behind the desk and one at the desk.
And was anybody else, should we say, being there, held there for observation, or just you?
There was one patient who came out briefly and then went back. Not really worth getting into.
And none of these folks were willing to talk to you?
No. As a matter of fact, the guy at the desk, I stood 2 feet from him and said, excuse me, about 6 times. Now, by now, they have decided... someone did talk to me, finally, around 12:30 or 1 o'clock in the morning, and she was drenched in perfume, which causes really serious symptoms for me, seizures, all kinds of stuff, which I wrote down, but I can't seem to find. But I kept having to back away from her, and I said, I'll never get out of here now. She interviewed me for a while. I do not remember the conversation. And then it was decided...
You remember the odor, huh?
I remember the odor. All of them were drenched. It was like each of them had a bottle. And I remember thinking that each of them were ghouls. That's what they looked like, ghouls. And that's what they acted like. Now, the first shift wasn't so bad. This was the graveyard shift. Ghouls, graveyard. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It actually took me quite some time to get that blanket. The cramps set in hard. And then I was called a liar because of the... not mentioning the hormones.
So you've been held from early evening until after midnight. Were you finally allowed to... when did they give you a bed?
Oh, they let me go lay down, but it was still too cold, and I was wide awake, and I was too restless, and basically there was a telephone there, a payphone, and another phone, which I'm sure was tapped since this was the observation area. And I thought, well, what the hell, I'll check my messages. I also called the owner of the car and said, because they decided to release me. And I called her up and said, don't go get the car. I called her before they decided that and said, don't go get the car until tomorrow. And she said, oh, I'm not going till tomorrow anyway. And I called her back later and said, don't worry about the car. They're letting me go. This is about 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm sure she appreciated that, too, since she had to be at work at 7:30.
So after holding you for how many hours?
What are we, from 7 till 2 or so now?
So they decided you weren't 72-hour hold material and they were going to instead dump you outside? Or?
No, they actually called a cab.
Really?
But they still wouldn't let me have my pants.
Well, maybe they had... This is a... You know, this... Well, the pants are kind of a trophy thing. It's a male thing. You probably wouldn't understand it, but go ahead.
This was what made it all come clear to me. Was when I got on that free phone and checked my messages, there was a message from the head of the shelter, the homeless shelter, stating that there was a reporter from the Sentinel who wanted to do an article on people who were on the Section 8 waiting list or who had Section 8 but were unable to find housing. And in the middle of that, one of the ghouls said, "That phone's been turned off." And I said, "It's still talking." And she said, "Well, it's supposed to be off." And basically, I found the timing really interesting, that as soon as the issue of homelessness came up and someone in authority about the issue came on the line was cut.
Of course, you might have been a little paranoid or overly apprehensive because of the pressure you were under, too.
Oh, of course.
I could have been.
Yeah.
I mean, you were under some pressure.
I was tired.
Right. So they released you finally? Did they give you, letting you take a shower, or no?
No.
Did they offer you that opportunity? Or?
Oh, no. No, and I wouldn't. I wanted out bad.
Get out of there.
Yeah.
So the cab took you back to the campsite? Or?
Yeah, which was full of giant rats.
None so nasty as those who had driven you to the
No, but one of them tried to get in the car with me.
A friendly rat.
A hungry rat. A fat, hungry rat. And so basically I couldn't sleep until dawn. So now I'm in trouble because when I did wake up, it was past checkout time. And that pretty much ends the story.
Did the friendly woman ranger come over and help you leave? Or?
No, actually, there was one woman there who had been on my side the year before because the staff had split. So they sent her over, and I explained to her that once I discovered the rats and how big they were, I couldn't sleep until dawn. And
you were thinking of maybe setting up an industry for, you know, canned rats as a sustenance material.
And rat coats.
Actually, some of those rats are, you know, they used to have them down on the mall in the old days. You don't see them down there much anymore.
No, they're all up at Henry Cowell's now.
Reassuring. Those are not the mall rats, by the way. Those are the real rats.
These were huge.
We're talking with Flower, not her real name, who had a rather, as you can hear, intense experience with...
This would not have happened if I hadn't been homeless. I'm certain of that. Because I have seen them deal with medical emergencies before, and they have dealt with it with kindness and extra... given people extra time, extra whatever they needed to deal with their medical emergency. I've never seen them treat anybody as poorly as they treated me. And I don't even think that had I been with someone else that would have attempted what they did. I was by myself and unprotected, and this was a power game, and it was a very clear message that they don't want any homeless people up there. Even though all I do when I go there, or did, was sleep. I don't play loud music.
Now, there was your mistake. You see, sleeping is criminal behavior in Santa Cruz, and it's a no-no. In case you haven't seen the big no-sleeping signs for the homeless as you enter town, actually, they don't have them, but they should. Instead, they have no-camping signs, kind of a misnomer, because, you know, the homeless people coming in, they go, "Oh, I can't, you know, whip out my tent and set up a campsite." No, you can't sleep. Period.
You can't sleep,
in Santa
period.
Cruz after 11 o'clock.
It is a very awful position to be in, to know that you can be rousted in the middle of your sleep for the crime of sleeping.
And that's, I suppose, one of the reasons that you went to campsites like Henry Cowell and did things like cat sitting, and now are, I guess, more pleased to be in Camp Paradise?
Camp Paradise is human, yeah. Yes, I like Camp Paradise. I'm so impressed. I think that, well, personally, I think that there is housing out there. I think that there's something else going on, that I don't pay that much attention to politics. I'm too busy trying to stay alive. But I think the housing is there. I just, there's some kind of game going on. And
well, certainly the housing could be there, whether it's, there are structures that could be built very quickly, there are yurts, there are tent cities that could be used. I mean, you know, there are numerous solutions that have been proposed literally dozens of times over the years to city council, board of supervisors, different social service agencies. but they always find some good reason why you can't do any of that stuff, and why you have to keep the existing laws, which criminalize 1,000 to 2,000 people in the city, and I would say 6,000 to 10,000 people in the county,
and
illegal at night.
I'd like to refute the notion that homeless people are homeless by choice. I am not homeless by choice. I want to live in a house. But the other thing that this county does not provide is help for people who are severely disabled to find housing, people who can't get around, people who don't have transportation. If you can't do it yourself, forget it. You're lost. You know, you either do it yourself or you have a good supportive family, or you're screwed if you're disabled.
So how long have you lived in this county, Flower?
20 years.
And what point did you become homeless?
About a year ago.
And so you've had a full year's dose of homelessness. And
I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I am glad Camp Paradise is there, but I don't like being homeless. I'm not well enough to live that way. I need to be kept warm and dry, and to have easy access to a bathroom. Sometimes I can't walk more than a few feet. I'm just not well enough. I mean, camping trips in the summertime, that's one story, but I am not healthy enough to camp year-round.
I don't know many people actually who, I suppose as a number of people have to, but I don't know if how much of the population would actually be able to survive in a homeless situation. I guess a proportion of people are going to find out as the rents rise.
Yeah.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm your host, Robert, waiting for your many phone calls here at 427-3772. Phone lines are open and empty, so let's get into it if you'd like to be on the air, because this is an option. Have you had a similar experience? Have you got friends who have had these kinds of horror stories? Are you any particular opinions on the subject?
Of being punished for not being able to afford a home where homes are unaffordable.
Or to afford to rent where rent seemed to be escalating.
Yeah.
Six pack up on his ass. I'll have the hobos in my yard, you know that?
And that, of course, in case you didn't guess, was Hobo Train. Again, another cut from the infamous Skidmark Bob's Houseless USA Volume 1. We are eagerly awaiting Volume 2. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. 427-3772 is the call-in number. And you have about 18 minutes to call in, or you'll be stuck with that non-talk show host, Uncle Dennis. Mr. Earth First, he's got lots of Earth First stuff coming up, with people being arrested right and left, battered, and generally messed with, shot at the local tree sits, and I hope he gives lots of good updates on that. Even I was running into folks who were in that situation as I wandered around the farmer's market yesterday. But I'm going to kind of stick to my side of the scoreboard here. My topic is civil rights on the streets, and as I mentioned earlier in the show, there is a NASNA conference up in San Francisco, North American Street Newspaper Association. That is a group that includes, 40 or 50 homeless papers throughout the continent, ranging from the largest newspaper in New York City called Street News to your very own local Santa Cruz rag, the Street Shit Sheet, which is my occasional homeless news flyer, which hasn't come out since April, but does peek out every now and then. To the chagrin of Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, or Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, as I've indiscreetly called him at different times after he shut down communications at City Council. Anyway, NASNA is happening tomorrow and the next day. There's a protest on Saturday, and the protest is concerned with the mainstream media and how they treat homeless people. And I'm going to read what some of the demands are. It's a rather extensive list. There are actually 8 major demands, but I think they bear discussion and, consideration. 1, eliminate all prejudicial language, demeaning descriptions, bigoted stereotypes, and other examples of hate language directed at homeless people. Prejudicial descriptions of the poorest of the poor have no place in the major media and are as unacceptable as prejudice directed against any other minority, race, gender, or sexual orientation. When the mainstream media singles out homeless people as the one minority that is still, quote, socially acceptable to stereotype and demean in print, it is inciting public intolerance and giving tacit approval to the scapegoating of a persecuted group. That's number 1, eliminate all prejudicial language. 2, stop championing the criminalization of homeless people by slanting news and editorial coverage in a way that puts pressure on public officials to sweep or cleanse homeless people from certain areas with police repression. In this day and age, newspapers would not dare to champion the removal from public areas or the enforced segregation of any other group of undesirables. It is unconscionable for the mainstream media to advocate directly or indirectly that homeless people be criminalized for performing acts that are essential to their daily survival. Looks like we have a call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, this is Scott.
Hey, Scott, good to hear you.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
All right.
Did you... We're reading, of course. Can you hear what we've been reading, or are you just sort of calling in blind here?
I was listening for the last few minutes.
Uh-huh. Any comments?
I don't know. I don't know what you were reading.
Yeah, what I've been reading is the series of demands that NASNA, or I guess one of the members of NASNA, the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, has of the mainstream media. NASNA is the North American Street Newspaper Association that's having its conference up in San Francisco tomorrow and Saturday. It's going to be a protest against mainstream media's sidelining and blackballing and also smearing of homeless people. And that's, I'm reading a bit about that. And people are, by the way, invited to call 423-HUFF after the show if they want to go up to this NASNA conference. You have to be willing to kind of rough it tomorrow night. We're hoping we can find places to crash, and we don't know, but I'm leaving at 6 in the morning tomorrow morning if anybody wants to go. But Scott, you're a man I usually call up when I'm looking for info on city council. Did you make your way to the Tuesday city council meeting?
I was there for the evening session, a little bit in the afternoon session.
Any updates?
Well, in the evening session, they got rid of the Broadway-Bromer bike path going through Arana Gulch. Still looking into possibilities of doing it through the Yacht Harbor or possibly over the Yacht Harbor, but they're not going to go through the Arana Gulch Greenbelt properties, which a number of people, actually, the majority of the people that have ever showed up at any public forum on this have been against it going through Arana Gulch. And it took the city council 10 years to finally get it.
And it took the great liberal progressives at least 2.5 years to get it, right?
Well, it took them 2.5 years to get the votes. Tim Fitzmaurice has always been in favor of it. He was on the Transportation Commission prior to being on City Council. He always voted in favor of it when he was on the Transportation Commission.
Now, you've spoken about this before as not only being environmentally questionable, but also providing essentially, there's a homeless angle because it opens up the Arana Gulch area to police surveillance and kind of patrolling,
right,
in a way that doesn't exist before, right?
Right. Right now, there's a number of encampments in Arana Gulch and Hagman Gulch, which are both on this Greenbelt property, and that was part of the proposal, was to make the path 12 feet wide and the bridges strong enough for quote-unquote emergency vehicles, which would mean the police would patrol it at night. And they have, you know, some of the patrol cars have these million candle power lights on top of them. So they could just sit up on the bridges and shine their lights up the gulch, which is where the homeless people are camped out. And
that's now been definitively defeated.
Yeah, as far as going through around a gulch, this connection won't happen that way. It'll either happen over or through the Yacht Harbor via Frederick Street Park.
Another issue that came up was the county convention center, the money for essentially Canfield's ads and the.
Yeah, I didn't make it in time for that one. That was in the afternoon.
What I was told was, and I'm not for sure on this, but I think they passed the expanded proposal, which I guess included $400,000 rather than $360,000, but I don't know if Crone and Sugar voted against it, which was, I guess, my concern when I raised the issue at council, which is why are these gutless wonders ducking out?
Right. Why are the taxpayers yet again footing the bill for the boardwalk? Why are we paying for TV ads for the boardwalk? You know, it's ridiculous that we should be doing that. I mean, the boardwalk, you would think, would be making enough of their own money, but, you know, that's another thing that's never happened since these guys got in office 2.5 years ago, which they claimed they were going to do, was do an analysis to find out what it costs the city to support the boardwalk and how much in taxes they're getting from the boardwalk.
And another issue that I raised, I guess, even, well, 1999 at the CAB board was, how much housing has the boardwalk destroyed in the last 40 years?
Right. Tremendous amount.
Now, I also understand that on Tuesday, of course, we had the sad debacle of the Lee property being sold, being handed over to Mercy Charities for management, and a relocation plan that really, really will not provide guarantees set in place. And I suppose you weren't at that 11 o'clock morning session.
I wasn't there for that either.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody was. I know that Becky Johnson was thinking of going to it, but I don't know if she ever showed up at it. I also know there was another item, which was the accessory dwelling unit issue, which went to a subcommittee at the public, I guess called the Accessory Dwellings Unit Subcommittee, which nobody ever heard of, and met the day before. Any word on that?
Well, all they voted on that was to send what they've done so far to the Planning Commission for further review. And then it'll come back to City Council. But basically, they did a big cop-out on this thing. They're saying that, well, we're not going to grandfather the already existing illegal units because that's a whole other issue, and we're going to do that separately. Now, more than likely, they'll never do it at all. They're just saying, you know, all they're doing right now is making it easier for people that want to build something in their backyard to do it.
But they won't allow those who currently, the 2,000 to 3,000 ADUs, accessory dwelling units, garages, and so forth, that are currently existing, they won't legalize these so that people who are in tenants in them and have problems can make complaints without fear they'll completely lose their housing, right?
Right. I mean, that's what happens right under the current system, is if you live in one of those and you city, they come in and shut you down. I mean, I've known several people that it's happened to because they couldn't get their landlord to fix things. They finally went to the city against my advice. I would never advise anyone to go to the city if they know, if they live in a known illegal unit, you know.
Well, you know, I talked to Gene Arner, who's the staff on that subcommittee. I called in to find out what was going on with the committee on Monday, and he told me that there had been around 10 complaints this year for the last year around illegal accessory dwelling units. I guess it means that all those accessory dwelling units are in great shape, even the illegal ones, or else everybody's got their mouths firmly shut.
Right.
And, of course, that whole issue, like rent control, like the sleeping ban, like real affordable housing, like community control of police, is not being discussed at all by City Council.
Right.
What about the riverfront, the situation where Canfield has been squatting on and actually profiteering by a parking lot on what should be public land?
Well, that issue hasn't been on the agenda, at least not the public agenda at any time. I mean, they have it in closed session, but and as far as the public knowing what's going on there, we don't know. I mean, they did a forum a week or so ago on it at the Loudoun Nelson Center, the River Task Force did, and the city's the attorney the city hired to handle this case made a presentation, but he didn't really tell, what the strategy is. He didn't tell what sort of information they've uncovered. And basically he's saying, well, it's better to negotiate with them than to go to court. And myself, I don't think, until the city files a lawsuit, the boardwalk's not going to negotiate. So I don't know why they're thinking that they can negotiate with these people. I mean, as soon as they file a lawsuit, the boardwalk will be willing to negotiate. But until then, why should they? There's no reason for them to negotiate in good faith at all.
Another issue was the issue of first alarm security, providing security for special events. You know what happened with that?
No, I wasn't there for that one either.
Right, I know that First Alarm has a rather nasty reputation in some quarters.
Right.
And again, that was another...
Wannabe cops that can't make it through...
cop school?
Yeah, whatever, for whatever reason. Either they're, too fat or too dumb or whatever, But...
I don't like to hear our police force described in that way. I mean, I say for police force because so many of our police officers do come from First Alarm, right?
I don't know.
A number of them do, I know that.
I thought they recruited them from, Alabama and Mississippi and stuff.
Well, I can assure you that City Manager for Life Dick Wilson spares no expense in getting the very best for our community and a multitude of officers to cover all kinds of criminal situations, whether it be sleeping on the levee or sitting on the mall.
Right.
Well, Scott, anything else you want to, anything upcoming events or meetings or announcements in the next few days or until next Sunday anyway that we should know about, anything like that?
Not really, life goes on. I mean, you can always call Tim Fitzmaurice and tell him what you think.
Hey, the mayor's number is 420-5017, actually for the entire city council. If you want to talk to Tim, call 420-5020. And then you have to wait a bit, and you'll get the right extension. But definitely call him and tell him to save Camp Paradise and end the sleeping ban. Any particular messages you suggest the mayor should receive?
Well, he should also receive a message that because he was one of the people, Premack, Kennedy, and Fitzmaurice all voted against killing the Arana Gulch bikeway. And if Tim is a member of the Green Party and supposedly is upholding these green principles the Green Party stands for, that vote goes directly against all those principles,
Now, wait a minute.
And once again, there was not a single person at that hearing that came forward and said, I'm a member of the Green Party. Not a single person stated that. The Green Party here in this town has never, as far as I know, taken an environmental stand, and that's what the whole party was founded on.
I can't have these kinds of assaults on the Green Party on the air. I'm very sorry, Scott.
That's why I withdrew from the Green Party, because they're such a, I don't know what they're doing, but they're not standing up for the principles the party was founded on, and the party's still, supposedly the principles that guide the party.